moment. Josh Schuler. Hey, Josh.
Hey, brother.
I don't know. I feel like maybe we need just something a little more enthusiastic from you. I mean, this is a big deal. This show. In all of our pre-roll, you're always like, "Yo, Phil, what's up?"
Oh, yes, that's fair. Like when it comes down to it, I'm having lots of conversations with investors all the time. You know, people who are self-directed, looking at markets, and dude, there's not a lot of hope out there right now. Which, I mean, that's why we are here, to offer hope in a different way of things. But the collective receipt of all of that means that, man, it can weigh on me a bit.
Heavy is the head.
Heavy is the head. Yeah, man.
I was in the grocery store the other day, and this will make your son proud. I was wearing a pair of Jordans because I do love some Jordans. And like a 14-year-old kid, I'm guessing he was around 14, 15 years old, is behind me in line. And he says, "Hey, man, nice drip." And I think that means that he thought I had a cool outfit on. So
yes.
I think that means I'm cool.
Yeah, it does mean that. The fit is dripping is the way the cool kids say it, for sure.
But those are not the kinds of drips that we're talking about today, Josh, are they?
That is not the kind of drips. No, that's not. We're talking about a totally different drip entirely.
Completely different type of drip entirely. Drips, what are they? Give me like a quick crash course.
Man, like drips are our just way to think of an idea that's cultivated for those on the MeFlow platform who are looking for ideas to express in the markets. You know, like there is a really simple formula for being consistently successful investing, especially in equity markets. And it goes something like this. You have to have a probabilistic idea, like better than a 50-50 chance. There's a reason and a rationale that supported why to buy that or sell it or whatever you're doing. So you have to have that. But then the other part of that is that you have to have risk management, because not every idea works. And so you have to be able to like figure out, well, which ones work and which ones don't, because the ones that don't work, I want to know that they're not working so that I can preserve capital and redeploy it. And the ones that are working, I want to like make sure that I stay in that. And when you look at data and investors, or like what we call multi-session or, long-term investors, the behaviors are very similar. They're just compressed based on whatever time frame they are, because humans are humans. But what that is that like, one, it's hard to find an idea. And we see this in retail investors. They love having access to markets. There's more access to markets than ever. There's fewer barriers to enter than ever. That's wonderful. That's a great thing. But where do they find the ideas? Like, what do they actually buy? Like, what do they invest in? Like, when I first started investing in 08 and 09, I was like, I don't even know what you buy. I don't even know, what do you buy? So what?
Yeah. Where does one go to buy what we're supposed to buy?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so where have people gone like in the last couple of years? I mean, they've gone to stocks and companies of brands that they know. My son buys Nike stock in his Robinhood account, right? Or somebody buys Apple or Amazon or Facebook or Nvidia because they're, gamers and they like chips and stuff like that. Or AMD or, or they're going after some of the names that like the GameStops and the AMC. Well, where do they find about those?
Yeah. Whether the meme stocks.
All the meme stocks, right? Where people are literally placing memes and they're talking about them on YouTube or Reddit or these other platforms. And why into those? Like, what makes those attractive is like, that's the idea. And outside of that, nobody's got an idea, right? So like, to be a consistent investor, you have to have an idea. Well, here's the other thing that's tied to that behaviorally is that if I don't know where to find other ideas, the brain wants more and more to have the idea that I have work. Because if this one doesn't work, I don't know what else I'll do. I don't know where I'll find another idea. So it's like you connect more tightly emotionally to that idea working out. Plus, we don't want to be wrong. So we want to believe that it's going to work out. So those are the ideas. And because of that, we see the returns. I mean, they're still today, even a year plus after, there's still people trying to buy GameStop or buy AMC stock. Why? They're connected to that. They're emotionally connected to it. And so that's what's got to work out. I mean, years ago, I had a mess of shares in a company called Varingo. Have you ever heard of Varingo?
I can't say that I have ever had the pleasure.
The ticker symbol was VRNG. They are no longer listed because they're no longer a company.
Did you bring them down, Josh?
I did not. No. So they were a CEO. The company consisted of a CEO and 19 attorneys, and they bought patents and sued companies that had potential infringement. What a great business model, right? So they actually sued Google and won.
Wow.
So, their entire revenue was like winnings from lawsuits, right? Well, I mean, they got this huge settlement against Google. Well, Google never paid it. You know, Google was like, we'll pay lawyers before we pay you, right? Sure. And so the company went bankrupt and I lost everything on the shares. And I was just like, oh, I was just so committed to this idea. That doesn't lead to consistent, dependable results. It also creates a situation where, like, in that specific investment, I was in that thing for 6 months before I finally puked out of it. And, you know, I think I lost half the investment. And then it wasn't just that I lost the face value of the investment. I also had a massive opportunity cost, right? And for those, you know, listening to this, who don't understand the idea of an opportunity cost. An opportunity cost is, what did I not make because I was trapped in this thing, right? So that's a cost to me as well. And so, you know, part of like moving forward as an investor is recognizing the dynamic of opportunity cost. If I got an idea that's not working, let me cut it. And then having tools to know when it's not. So all of that to say, a drip is our gift to the world, our gift to investors who...
This is why I called you the benevolent.
Yeah. It's an idea that has a probability to it. So like, I mean, that Veringo that I was in, that was not a high probability idea. That was, I mean, if I had thought through it, I would have gone like, of course, Google's never going to pay this. They're going to countersue all day long and they're never going to pay this. This company's going to zero, you know, or the GameStops and the AMCs out there. Like, they're not going to be rescued. This is not going to work out. These are not assets to hold. Anybody who like just goes out and like buys a stock, you ask them, you're like, okay, well, like, well, where are you getting out? Like, what's the price target? And they're like, I don't know. Like that's not a recipe for success. Yeah. I mean, I was doing a portfolio review for a colleague and a guy lost $250,000 in 2019 buying stocks. And you know, like you're looking through them and you're like, okay, why did you buy that one? And that one and that one. And like, what did you hope to get out of it? Just like you said, higher. But like some of them, he bought 30 cents from the high and then lost hundreds of dollars per share on them. That's not a recipe for success. So a drip at first says, here's the idea. Here's why this has a rationale. Here's why there's actually a better than 50-50 probability around this. That's one thing. That's one part of the formula for consistent long-term results. The second part of that is it says, well, how do you know that this idea is working? And how will I know that it's not working? Which is even actually more important. Because if I know it's not working, even before it like reaches like my terminal risk spot, I can take action and I can get out of that idea. And then because MeFlow generates new drips every day, if the idea that I'm in didn't work, guess what? There's another one that's out there that will work. And you know how, like, if you can flip a coin, you can flip a coin 10 times and it could show up heads or tails, like one side 10 times in a row, right? But if you do it 1,000 times, it will show up 50-50.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the rule of large numbers. So this is, if you have a probabilistic approach, if you can preserve the capital on the ones that don't work, eventually it will work for you. It's like when I was in high school playing baseball and there was this guy that moved to our town and I mean, had a great swing and like the guy never got a hit. Well, on the box score, he didn't get a hit. But like, if you looked at his swing and the cuts that he was taking, he was hitting line drives all day long. He was just hitting them straight to the outfielders.
Yeah, that's just unlucky.
But he kept taking the hits, right? And eventually he broke through and he was a, you know, 300 plus batter by the time the season was over, which is, you know, great. And, you know, was a starting contributor to our team. So that's what a drip is. A drip is an idea that has some probability around it. And then the risk controls that let me know, hey man, should I stay in this idea or should I not?
Yeah.
And this is the recipe that has fueled every successful institutional hedge fund that has seen outsized gains for decades. Even in terms of like the most successful, which is Jim Simmons' fund Renaissance, which they've seen, I mean, like ridiculous gains. You know, if the average S&P 500 inflation adjusted return is 6.2% over 20 years, I mean, they've been seeing 30, 40% years for 20 years. They're using probabilities and they're using risk controls.
So let's take a look at maybe what one of these might look like, because on any given day, there's, you know, a dozen or so drips that are put out. If you go to MeFlow.com and, you know, and you subscribe and it's got all these drips spelled out for you and you choose one. I was looking at the drips from today and there's an example from DocuSign, and we all know DocuSign, right? And then it's got the opportunity. You know, what is the opportunity here? It says DocuSign is lacking direction and likely to continue to lack direction over the next several weeks. With an implied volatility rank of 76.94%, it's a good candidate to sell options and collect premiums over the next 20 days. So there you go. That's DocuSign. That's the opportunity. That's what could happen. And then, Josh, we've right. got
Which
here.
Which requires us to unpack a whole bunch.
It does require. This is true.
So let's start unpacking that.
Okay.
So for one, you know, when we talk about these drips and talking about them as having a probabilistic idea, so how can we have an idea or even say that they're probabilistic? Because, you know, buying a stock, for example, is a 50-50 thing. It's why that the long-term performance of an active stock picker doesn't hold, because there's not enough edge there to be able to make that work. So how do those that actually see success over the long term and outperform the market, how do they do that? Either they're in them specifically, or they're using it as part of the matrix and the calculus of the idea that they're doing in the specific stock, but they're looking at the options. So an option to a stock is kind of like insurance for your house, or insurance for your car. It's a risked premium tool. It's a form of insurance that you can use around a specific stock. What's interesting about that, just like insurance have like terms, right? Like a period of time that has a value, and then it either has to be renewed or it expires, right? If you get term life insurance, it's got a face value that has a value for a period of time. It protects you against an adverse event, and then you got to renew it or it expires. Options work the same way, but instead of it being a person or a house or car, you're talking about a stock. Now, here's what's really crazy about that. If I buy a life insurance policy, that doesn't impact when I will die. The policy's priced based on the probabilities that I will die, right? Because the insurance company wants to make money. In the equity markets, the options, they not only are priced according to what the market expects the ranges of that product will be, but because there are two sides to either side of that position within that option, it actually predicts where the stock will go. It's like you bought hurricane insurance that told the hurricane where to go.
Not even the Nazis could do that.
Yeah, not even that. I mean, I'm sure they tried, but not even the Nazis could do that. So what's interesting about that is then you can use combinations of these options, and there are two different kinds. There's calls and puts, and you can either begin a position by buying them or selling them, which that's a new thing for an investor to think of. Because when they think about stocks, they think about buy a stock and sell a stock, right? I initiate it by buying the share and I get out of it by selling the share. Okay, well, you can initiate it in a position actually selling something. So you're actually borrowing a contract from a brokerage and you're selling that or writing that to someone else for a period of time. And then there are a number of classic combinations of these different option strategies called multi-leg option strategies that have been used for decades. And there's great math around those that if you knew the strategy and you knew which stock to apply it to, because some stocks are better conditioned for different strategies, then you would be kind of tilting the scales in your favor. And that's in fact what MeFlow does, is it goes out and looks at the 4,000 stocks that are out there in the market. And it says, okay, here are 20 different multi-leg option strategies. Oh, this one is a great fit for that one. So like the one that you brought up, DocuSign, which was for a strangle, it's saying that, hey, the conditions are ripe that DocuSign, out of 4,000 stocks, DocuSign meets the best criteria to put on a strangle.
And a strangle, I might add, is basically selling one call and one put.
Yes. So it's a funky name, right? But essentially what it's doing is it's saying, I believe that this stock is going to be in a price range. So, whatever the last traded price of that stock is, it's going to be over a period of time, typically 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to stay above one price and stay below one price. And I'm selling a call above it. So I'm selling a call option above it, and I'm selling a put option below it. And those are basically two insurance premium products that I know the max profit right away. And then as we move toward exiting the trade about 20 days down the road, then if we're between those two prices, then I get to keep that. So like as of today, DocuSign closed at $47.44 was the closing price. And so I'm going to construct a strangle that is using December options. They actually expire in 30 days. And I'm going to sell the 40 put, and then I'm going to sell the 60 call. So I'm going to sell the 40 put and the 60 call. And that gives me, based on the prices of those options, it gives me a credit to my account of $3.64. Now, options control 100 shares. So one option controls 100 shares. So $3.64. So that's basically saying $3.64 per share of DocuSign. It's 100 of those. So if I just did one strangle, that would give me $364 to my account to keep if DocuSign is between $60 a share and $40 a share in 29 days. Okay. Now, that position is going to cost me an amount of capital to put the trade on. And just like if you were going to buy shares, you have to put money up to trade that, right? So let's just see what it would cost me to have the opportunity to go get that strangle. So I'm going to sell the 40, sell the 60. So that's going to cost me about $3,000 in capital to have the potential of getting $364. Well, let's run the quick math on that. If I get the full $364, then in 29 days, that's a 10% return on capital.
Pretty good.
In one idea. And, okay, so here's the probability part. There is an 80% chance that we will get at least half of that. So if it was 364, we should see one, let's do what 175. We should see about $175. Oh, a little bit more, 80% chance we're going to get that within 20 days or less, you know, pretty awesome. And then if we're, you know, between those at expiration, so within 29 days, then we get the full $364. This is great. Cause these, so like, if you understand a strangle, and that sounds really complicated. If you've never heard of a strangle before, you're going, I need higher math. I promise you, you don't, you just need to like see a couple of these examples. And then once you've seen one, you can say, hey, I want to look out for strangles in my flow of ideas. So like when you're in MeFlow and you're looking at your flow, you'd go, oh man, here's a strangle. I know what a strangle is. I know how to like construct that. And you know, we talk through like how to construct a strangle. And then they're actually the easiest multi-leg strategy to start with. And they have the highest probability of success of all of the strategies that are out there. In fact, Pepperdine University did a 20-year back-tested study selling a strangle every 45 days, I believe, on the SPY ETF. So that's basically an exchange-traded fund that tracks the S&P 500. And they sold, I think there was like 7,000 samples because they use a bunch of different expirations, 7,000 samples, and they just like let them run into the ground. So some of them they lost big on, some of them that they won big on, but the risk-adjusted return over 20 years, just doing that, was 16.2%. So you're 10% better than the S&P 500 over those 20 years using a strangle on one product. They didn't even do any management around that. So, you know, the risk parts of the strangle, for example, if you put this one on in DocuSign, if it trades above $60, you get out. You buy back. If you trade below $40, you get out, you buy it back. And then, you know, you may lose a little bit on that depending on how fast we get to that price. You're not going to lose your whole account. And then you can look for the next one, right? On their study from Pepperdine, they didn't do any of that.
No risk management.
Like they just, no risk management at all. They just ran it in the ground. And that even illustrates how powerful the probabilities are that even though they didn't do risk management around it, they still saw that return. So using the risk controls inside of a drip, you should do much better.
And if all of that is way over your head, because there's a lot of information there, these drips actually spell it out for you quite clearly in like little bullet points, right? So
yeah.
Josh talked a lot about the strangle and what that means for this particular, to stick with the same example of DocuSign, what that strangle means for DocuSign on, you know, X date. And then there's all these bullet points as to basically just summarizing what to do, what that means specifically, what happens. You know, if there's like a therefore what that's important for understanding these, it's all right there. And then it talks about what is the risk? What's the worst case scenario? And from the risk, how will we know if we're right? And maybe more importantly, how will we know if we're wrong? Right?
Super important.
That to me, that is the linchpin of this whole thing.
It really is. At the end of the day, whenever we place an investment, all of us are storytellers. Like we're writing a story and we have a belief in how that story is going to play out. And it may or may not. We can believe a lot with lots of hope that it's going to, you know, play out in a certain way. And it may not. And what we found from brain science, and this is a human thing, I think it even is even more important as an American, because Americans really, really like to be right. If you don't believe us, go get friends from Europe. They will tell you how we Americans love to tell everybody what to do. And we love to be right about that. There's benefits and drawbacks. Well, there's a specific drawback when it comes to investing, because if I don't prime the brain to recognize when I'm wrong, I am less likely to take the action that I should take when I am wrong. And I mean, I've experienced this. I don't know anybody who's been an investor for some period of time who hasn't, where, you know, maybe you got into an idea and then it starts to go against you and you don't really know where you were wrong, because most investors don't spec that out before they get in. They just get in and they're buying around hope, and their whole belief is this is going to go higher, right? Or it's going to go for me. Starts to go against you. So then you start grabbing for any bit of information that will support why you should stay in it. And you'll even start to see patterns that don't exist to keep you in it. The way to get around this is to prime your brain beforehand, is to say, before I even put this on, I know what would invalidate that, and be able to like have that in a journal that says, hey, here's where it is. And in future iterations of the MeFlow app and platform, we're going to do more of that for you. Like, we'll notify you when it's reaching the risk parameters. We're going to help track that for you so that you get some additional support. But at a base level, even like where we are right now, we're spelling out, hey, if you put this on, here's how to know that you're wrong. And then make sure that you're checking up on that to know, oh, am I close to being wrong? Priming the brain to take the action I should take.
And you're trusting the system, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Don't pay attention to your gut. The gut is a terrible master when it comes to investments, yeah. Right?
That's right.
It will guard your heart here.
It will take you into the ground.
Trust the system. It's really quite beautiful the way all of this is spelled out. And if I'm going to say so, I'm just going to come out and say it. I think you guys should check it out, because it's pretty cool. You can see all this at MeFlow.com. And then you can check us out on social. MeFlow app, just Twitter, right? We're just on Twitter.
Right.
Okay. So Twitter.
We're also on LinkedIn. So you can search for us on LinkedIn.
Okay, cool. And Josh, what's your Twitter handle?
It's just Josh Schuler.
Josh Schuler. The Benevolent. Thanks again for listening to MeFlow Magic. I'm your host, Phil Knipe. And thanks as always to Josh Schuler, El Jefe, as he's affectionately known at the MeFlow Studios in Fort Collins, Colorado. If you like what you hear, do us a huge favor and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And please consider writing a review as well. It really helps us reach more listeners and ultimately keeps us going. The content, views, and opinions expressed in MeFlow Magic are for educational purposes only. As with all investments, there is a risk of loss, including principal, and no host or guest of MeFlow Magic shall be held liable. You should consult a financial advisor before making any investments relating to stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or whereby other investments relating to money. In other words, do your own research. This show is produced by me, Phil Knipe.